and welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast. Another episode, the first podcast of the year, and we have a special guest today. I actually met him on Instagram. You know, some guests I meet online, some guests I meet in person, but I met this one on Instagram, and he interviewed one of my friends a couple months ago, and I thought this kid was very dynamic. He was only 20 years old.
I like words like that, dynamic. Keep going. I like that.
Yes. And I actually, you know, don't meet too many 20-year-olds that are hustling at that age. They're typically in college or they're just trying to figure out life. But this kid has vision, and without vision, you'll perish, you know, what they say. But we got Alex Alberin. He's a head of an MMA agency. And
you know, it's actually Alberin.
Alberin.
The funny thing is we practiced the last name before the podcast, and I was still 50-50 on whether most people don't say it right. That's why my company name is called Alberin Sports Group, but then that's why I usually just say ASG, just as an abbreviation, because most people, they're like Abraham, Alberin, stuff like that, so that's why I'm just like ASG, simple. My logo is ASG.
So Alex, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what are you all about, and things like that?
Definitely. So I'm 20 years old. I go to FAU down here in South Florida, actually online. It's time efficient. And then I own an MMA management company called ASG or Alberin Sports Group. And I just manage local fighters down here in the area. And it's growing and progressing slowly but surely.
Now, can you tell the audience what's an MMA? What does that mean? And things like that.
So mixed martial arts like UFC, Bellator, if you watch that. It's basically, I would consider it the hardest sport in the world in terms of you have to know how to wrestle. You don't have to know how to do jiu-jitsu, which is basically choking in positions on the ground. You have to know how to box. You have to know how to kickbox. You have to know Muay Thai. You have to know clinch, judo. It goes on and on. So compared to like just boxing or even in football, you play one position. You just have to know how to play that one position. In MMA, you have all these different aspects to where you have to be not only good at, but like really, really good at, if not great at all these different aspects.
So now,
it's really the hardest sport in the world, in my opinion.
Now here's my question. Do you yourself fight in MMA?
If I have to. No, I'm kidding. No, I train. I've trained for like 4 years in mostly boxing, striking, some jiu-jitsu and wrestling here and there. But I'm definitely not what you'd call a fighter.
I can tell you're a high school wrestler.
No, I wish I was. I play basketball.
You're a basketball guy.
Yeah. I'm just saying that because wrestling is, it humbles you so much compared to other sports in the sense that, and I haven't really wrestled on like a really competitive level, but I've wrestled in the practice room and things like that. And wrestling is just different because the grind of wrestling compared to basketball, even football and other sports that most people play is just different. And it's just you.
Like, wrestling gets you ripped.
It's just the individual. Instead of like a basketball team, if I have a good game, but the team loses, I'm still pretty happy that, you know, I had a good game. I got 20 points, 5 assists, and the team lost, but you can't blame it on me. I did my job. But in wrestling or even MMA, if you lose, it's your fault at the
it's
end of the day.
Own.
So
wow.
It's, yeah.
So what got you into this?
So I've been watching UFC for years and years. I mean, since I was 12 or 13 with my family, all the pay-per-views we'd watch, and I've always been a fan of it. I trained here and there as a kid, but then once I was 16, 17, like towards the end of high school, I really started getting into training, and I've just been around the game for a few years, and I decided that I want to get involved in something that I'm really passionate about as a business, because I have business experience and I have other businesses that I'm involved in, but like I enjoy doing those. I like them. They're interesting, but I don't really love them. You know, it's not really my passion, some of the other things that I'm doing. But with MMA, that's always been really my passion. Like what I like to talk about, what I like to watch, what I like to research. So I just decided to get involved in the business side of it and become a manager.
That's
how it started.
Which, when you started watching it, it was pretty much when it started, didn't it?
I started watching it when it was pretty developed, probably 7-8 years ago I started watching it. Yeah, when I was 12, 13.
Wait, which it's interesting because I was hearing the original guy that sold it to someone else sold it for really low.
Oh, yeah, he sold it for $2
million. Wow.
And it was bought by Dana White and the Petita brothers, and then they just sold it for $4 billion. So,
wow. See, that's a big difference. He underpriced himself.
Well, at the time, not really, because the brand wasn't at where it's at today. Like UFC, everybody knows in general what the UFC is and what it does. Mm-hmm. But back in the day, they were bankrupt. You know, they barely could pay the fighters and pay the staff. The brand was not really on TV. It was illegal in most states. So the UFC before, when they bought it, it really was just for the name and their equipment and things like that. But then now, the UFC is a brand. And that's why they sold for $4 billion. It's one of the strongest brands in the world. And it's probably the most valuable sports organization in the world at this point.
Which is probably bigger than wrestling. Or no.
Like WWE?
Yeah.
Maybe.
You're hesitant.
WWE's been around for a lot longer, and it's been popular for a lot longer.
Yeah.
Like, UFC started becoming popular in the mid-2000s to late 2000s. That's only 15, maybe 10 years.
Right.
But WWE's been around for decades and been successful. I mean, Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, those were guys, I mean, in their, what, 70s, 80s, 90s.
Even before that.
Exactly.
50s and 60s, there was underground wrestling and things like that. But anyways, back to you.
Mm-hmm.
You're 20 years old. How many 20-year-olds or, like, how many friends do you know have, like, their own agency or, like, their own business?
It's just, that's the thing. It depends on the person's personality and, you know, their work ethic and what they're drawn to. Like, some people, like, if I want to become a doctor, me becoming an entrepreneur wouldn't really be beneficial in terms of, like, my future career as a doctor. It couldn't hurt. But for me, that's just the way I've always been. Like, I flipped shoes in high school and middle school. And I would always get things from my parents and family for, like, cheap and then flip them on eBay and even Craigslist. So I've always had that spirit. But then it's just actually taking an idea and then executing on it, not just having the idea sit in your head for months and even years.
Execution, which you had a few businesses before this one.
Yes.
You were telling me you had, like, a meals business?
Yeah, I had a meal prep company.
How was that?
Right out of high school. So how that happened was, I graduated in June 2016, and then I started the company in June 2016, like right when I graduated from high school, and it was just a complete accident, as I could cook healthy food, and I wasn't really a chef, but I can cook, it'll taste pretty good, it'll be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And
what, like, there was like chicken, veggies, what was like the example?
Basic, like chicken, veggies,
yeah,
basic healthy food like that, but I started because a family member of mine, she was like, oh, I know you eat healthy. I know you go to the gym, Alex. Please, can you cook for me? And I was like, I guess. I don't really have a kitchen. I don't know, like, safety, the requirements. And I don't know how to cook it and where to put the food in. It was kind of just like, okay, let's see how this happens, like, how it works and how much to charge and everything like that. And then she told her coworker, and then another family member found out, and then my mom's friend found out. And it just kind of spiraled like that, and then it became a pretty good way to make money at 18, like, doing my own thing, setting my own hours, and it was really just an accident.
Yeah, and which is interesting, you were saying, you know, like, there was a phase a couple of years ago with, like, this whole meal prep thing, you know? It, like, I saw it, you know, going to CrossFit, they will offer, hey, you know, there's a meal prep, you know, by this company, order them, and they'll just deliver it to your office. I haven't seen that trend lately. Maybe it's kind of phased out. It just really depends on where you're at. So, you know, right now, can you tell us a little bit, like, about your agency? What does it do? And things like that.
Gotcha. So, when I manage a fighter, I help them find fights. So, find matchups against the right opponents for the right amount of money and for the right contract.
Mm-hmm.
And I also help them get sponsors. So, I help them, you know, find a chiropractor, hook them up with a strength conditioning coach, hook them up with, like, CBD products, meal prep. Basically help them perform at their best.
Right.
And most of the time the sponsors give them stuff for free, if not at a huge discount. But then also help them find sponsors for when they fight on their shorts and even their shirt when they walk out. And then for the post-fight interview, get them sponsors to where the companies place their logo on the shirt, on the shorts when they fight. And it just helps the companies get some more local exposure. And it helps the fighters pay their bills and pay for the training and really make sure that they can train at the highest level possible and perform at their best come fight night. So I'm also a part-time, you know, therapist for some of these guys and girls, like hearing their problems, you know, helping them make decisions on whether they should pull out of a fight, if they're injured. A lot of things go into it besides what you see on Ballers, the TV show.
Which I have not seen.
Which you should definitely, it's a great show, but it's not realistic in terms of athlete representation or how you deal with a client. They're just partying with them most of the time, it looks like, in the show. That's what it seems like if you're watching the show. But in reality, you're meeting with them. You're hearing about the ups, the downs. You're with them when they win, when they lose. After the fight, when, you know, they could have just gotten knocked out. And everybody in the crowd cheered for them getting knocked out. And the next fight happens. And the crowd's like, okay, next fight. But then we're in the back like, oh, jeez. That sucked.
Now, we're in South Florida. Mm-hmm. And how, like, what I've been told and what I've heard and what you told me, that South Florida has an MMA presence. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, definitely. Down here in South Florida, it might be the hotbed of MMA in the whole country. Because just down here in South Florida, in maybe a 20-mile radius, you have MMA Masters, which is a big gym. American Top Team, which might be the biggest gym in the world.
Which is right next door.
Literally, there's an affiliate right next door in the same plaza, 2 minutes away. That's an affiliate. But then they have the big American Top Team, Coconut Creek. And it might be the best facility in the entire world in terms of MMA. They have dorms there. They have restaurants and little things inside the facility. Wow. And then they also have Hard Knocks 365, which is more in the Fort Lauderdale area. But just having three huge gyms like that within 20 miles of each other, it's a great thing. I mean, some states don't even have a big MMA gym. They have like little local gyms with local coaches. But to have all of these bodies and all of these people around the world coming to this area to train at the best facilities basically in the country and in the world, there's a lot of talent to be managed. And there's a lot of people that are looking for fights and are looking for managers, so it's a great place to be.
How intense are these workouts? Is this like more intense than boxing, you think?
Yeah, that's the thing. There's no really such thing as like, oh, this is harder than that in terms of like the workout intensity. As a sport, I think MMA is definitely more difficult than boxing, and I would say most other, if not all, sports. However, for the workout, it depends on the person. Like if I'm a grappler, I'm a wrestler, my wrestling cardio is going to be much better than somebody else who doesn't wrestle. But if they box, and I never boxed before, their boxing cardio is going to be much better than my boxing cardio. Like, if I've never boxed before, but I wrestled, it's a different, totally different style, totally different movements, so I'm probably going to get tired in, like, 10 minutes. Yeah. But if I've been boxing for 5 years at a high level, I could probably go 25, 30 minutes, cool, ready to go.
Have you ever heard of Logan Paul?
Yes.
Did you hear about like his boxing fight back in August?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. His first answer when he said, you know, what'd you think about the fight? It's like, man, I was tired. Like after like the very first few minutes, mm-hmm. The intensity is just. I mean, once they punch you, you still gotta keep going.
That's the thing. It's just
you gotta keep going, man.
It's really. It's not like any other. I mean, boxing of course is difficult as well, and MMA. Mm-hmm. is difficult as well, but there's really nothing like somebody getting in a small cage or ring with you, and they're trained as well, you're obviously trained, and you both are trying to basically kill each other. Like when you choke somebody out in an MMA fight and they tap, that's basically saying, okay, please let go or you're gonna kill me. If you break it down like that, it's a little more of a grim reality.
Were you not surprised that Mayweather beat McGregor?
Wow, that fight was a year and a half ago. That fight was, it was a money fight. It wasn't really going to be a competitive thing. I'm not surprised that Mayweather beat him. McGregor's an 0-0 boxer at the time he was, and has no amateur background. And Mayweather's, at the time, 49-0 with a huge amateur background, been boxing since he was like 4 years old. It was obvious what was going to happen, but it was still entertaining. It is the entertainment business, so why not?
Was a cash grab. It was really...
Yeah, but... Why not?
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting because if Mayweather did MMA, he'll probably lose.
He would definitely lose.
I like that confidence.
No, like, it's just, it's a matter of fact. I wouldn't say crazier things have happened to where he fought McGregor in an MMA fight. And that's the thing, they're two different sports.
Two different ones. And so I realized
it's not even really worth comparing.
You know, it's fun because I learned a lot. Like, MMA is a much quicker, you know, fight. Boxing could extend to an hour, 2 hours?
6 minutes. Yeah. Wow. So 12 rounds of 3 minutes. That's for a title fight.
Yeah.
And 36 minutes with a minute break in between rounds. It's really not that much in terms of rest time.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Do you think you're at the right time, right place when it comes to MMA? It feels like MMA is still young. It feels like it's in its teenage phase.
Oh, definitely. Compared to other more established sports like the NBA, NFL, MLB, which have been around since the early 1900s, which is a totally different era just in the world.
Right.
MMA is in its infancy in terms of like the player, the fighter, promoter relations and the contracts and the compensation, but the UFC basically built the sport, and they built it from nothing. Like I said, the UFC was bankrupt when they bought it. No brand, wasn't on TV, was illegal in most states. So, I mean, New York was banning MMA until like 2 years ago.
Why is that?
There's politics involved that I don't really have enough detail to go into.
No, I don't have enough information to go into. But yeah, because they had a fight at the Garden a couple years ago. I remember that.
Yeah. That was, I think UFC 205 was the first fight at Madison Square Garden.
Right.
Not mistaken.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the thing. It's, as a sport in itself, it's in its infancy, and it's only going to get bigger and better, and fighters are going to get paid more as time goes on.
What is the process from an amateur, a kid from the street that wants to do MMA? What is that process?
So, to be an amateur, you can basically be any guy off the street. You don't really have to have any special belts or requirements or level of experience. These amateur promoters, they'll just get, basically, like, if you want to fight, they'll book a fight for you, and then you don't even get paid as an amateur.
You just get exposure.
You get exposure, you get experience more so, and you can make a little money, I think, if you sell tickets, like, depends on the promoter, as I should say. I mean, you could sell tickets and maybe get 15-20%, right. So if your whole family goes, then you make a little money, but the promoter makes money off of putting you on the card, right?
Yeah.
And as an amateur, you need 5 fights as an amateur before going pro, in Florida at least. Different states have different regulations, but as an amateur in Florida, you need at least 5 fights, and then you could go pro. But you can get 5 fights in a matter of a year.
Now, obviously there's UFC, but there's probably like, I mean, I'm going to say this in soccer terms. It's like, you know, smaller leagues. Is that how it works?
Definitely, yeah. So there's, how it works is there's the UFC, which is the biggest and baddest promotion. Then you have Bellator and 1FC and PFL. Like, those are kind of like the B-plus leagues. I wouldn't call them B leagues, but like B-plus. Mm-hmm. Bellator maybe A-minus. And then everything else is just regional promotions. So, like, down here they have XFN, Combat Knights, Titan FC, which is a little more of a B-plus, A-minus promotion. But they're local. Like, they only get local fighters because they can't afford to fly guys from Vegas, New York, California, Carolina. Mm-hmm. Like, a promotion down here like Combat Knights, they can't really afford to fly guys, like I said. So they're going to have to get local guys. Those are regional promotions, local promotions.
What's the average age you see you kind of bump into? Are they like in their 20s most of the time? Or
you mean like when they're either pro or amateur?
They say amateur.
I mean, it depends on the pedigree that they're at, and then in terms of like where they want to go. If you're talking about like a legit prospect, they've been training since they were 10. They wrestled in high school. They're excellent at either striking and or grappling. Mm-hmm. And by the time they're an amateur, they'll probably be 20, 21 and have 10 amateur fights.
So you gotta start early. But
that's a prospect, like a blue chip guy. Wow. Where they're most likely gonna be in the UFC one day.
That is, I mean, you just can't start at, you know, at 24.
It's too competitive. In boxing, crazy things have happened, like Bernard Hopkins, and obviously it's a rare case, but he was like mid late 20s when he started going professional in terms of boxing, and he was one of the best world champions of all time in terms of his division. I believe he was a middleweight, 160 pounds, and he was fighting until he's almost 50. But that's a rare case. Most of the time in MMA, when you have all these different skills that you have to be great at, you have to be a young kid doing it. Wrestling in high school, doing boxing tournaments like Golden Gloves, doing jiu-jitsu tournaments as a kid as well, building up all these skills so that when you get to the bigger shows, you get experience, you get wins, you know your strengths, and you know you have the experience to take on the best guys in the world. But if you're starting when you're 20, and it's like, I'm about to work with this kid, he's 20 years old, he's been training since he was 12, he's a great wrestler, he wrestles and grapples with UFC level guys, and he's 20 years old. How are you going to start at 20 years old and compete with somebody like him?
Yeah, you can't.
Never say never, anything is possible. But most likely, you're not.
Now, like, along the process, where do you come in? Do you come in when the person is about to turn pro? Where do you come in?
Ideally, it depends on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one guy I'm working with, his name is Miguel Beza. He's 5-0 as a pro. He has a fight coming up. By the time you listen to the podcast, I think the fight will already happen. It's in a few weeks. But he has a fight coming up. He'll be 6-0. And he signed with me when he was 5-0 as a pro, and he's like 26 years old. That's more on the rare side. He just didn't really have a coach that was getting him fights and getting him sponsors. So that's, we met through a mutual friend, and that's how it happened that way. But for the most part, you're going to find guys when they're 3-1, 4-1, or 5-0 as an amateur. Like, they have a good amount of amateur fights. They obviously want to go pro, or they're a 1-0 or 2-0 pro. You're not really going to go and get a UFC guy and manage him, really, unless you're like a super agent. But for the most part, you have to start with these guys when they're younger, when they're not making money. So a lot of the work that you're doing is just to help them because you care about them personally and you want to see them grow, so that when they, or if they get bigger, then you can start seeing some type of compensation. But it's more for the love of the game. Like, you're not going to get into management or coaching or fighting to become a millionaire. It's more so that you love what you do, yeah, you love who you work with, and you love the whole idea around it.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's something that, like, you know, these fighters want to become pro one day, and you're trying to make their dream happen, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
And just being patient.
It takes a ton of patience. Yeah, because most, in MMA especially, most of my fighters are going to take an L. It's just a matter of more so when, not if. In MMA, there's maybe two or three out of, like, all time UFC guys that have gone undefeated. Right now there's Khabib Nurmagomedov. He just beat Conor McGregor. There's John Jones, who's technically not undefeated, but he's basically undefeated.
Yeah.
And then, really, besides those two, nobody else at a high level in the UFC hasn't lost. In boxing, you see guys are 40-0, 50-0, 45-0. It's just a different sport, and it's just a different sphere in terms of getting them fights and getting them competitive fights. But in MMA, even if I'm a great striker, I could be the best striker in the world, there's no way I'm going to have the best wrestling at the same time. No way.
Who's your favorite fighter?
All my fighters are my favorite fighters.
Of course you're going to say that, right? But if you had to name one, like, the top dogs.
Like, in the UFC, as of right now, my favorite fighter would have to be... I'm a bandwagon, but it would have to be... Actually, no. I would say TJ Dillashaw. He's the 135-pound champion. I just love his style, his tenacity, his competitiveness. He's a great fighter. That's the thing. He's great at everything. He wrestled in college, and he has that pedigree, and obviously the pedigree of a champion. He's the current UFC champion at 135 pounds. And he's just all around the best at striking, grappling, wrestling in his division.
Do you think the MMA has evolved since it first started?
Definitely.
Like, the techniques, I
mean. Oh, my God. It's so... You can't even really describe how much it's grown, in the sense that in the first UFCs and even in the early years, you had guys that were, they only knew how to do jiu-jitsu. They never even boxed before. And then I only know how to box. I don't know jiu-jitsu. So it's like, that's how they first started. Like, putting styles against each other, let's see what happens. But then it started getting to where, okay, guys can, you know, they can defend a takedown and they can brawl. Sprawl and brawl, it was called. But then now you have kids growing up as a five-year-old saying, I'm going to be the UFC champion. So as a kid, they're training jiu-jitsu and wrestling and boxing, kickboxing. They're in tournaments for each different discipline. So by the time they're in the UFC at 25, 26, they're monsters. They have no holes in their game.
How global is this? I know it's huge in Brazil. It's huge in America.
Huge in Brazil.
What other parts of the world is it?
It's developing in China. At the UFC, they're actually building a performance institute in China, $13 million institute in China.
That's it?
not a cheap thing. Pretty expensive. And the goal of that is to develop young talent in China to fight in the UFC in the future. So it's building in China. They just had a card in Argentina. I think they also had the first card in Russia.
Wow.
Earlier in 2018, or actually maybe in August or July. So it's growing around the world. And
so you're saying Russia has not been involved with the UFC much?
They've had fighters in the UFC, of course. But I'm talking about, like, the first card that was in Russia happened in
A few months ago. Yeah, because they're huge in fighting. I know boxing, they're pretty crazy about it.
Oh, no, yeah, definitely. It's in boxing, it's really dominated by, I guess you could say, Americans.
Yeah.
And then I guess you could say a mix of Mexicans and Europeans.
Yeah.
But there's really no, in boxing, there's really no dominant, I guess you could say, region or race of people that are just having all the titles and things like that. But in MMA, it's pretty diverse as well.
Yeah, like you were saying, Brazil, I mean, I remember there was a UFC big championship in Rio or in Sao Paulo. It was like massive pay-per-view and things like that. So let's swing over to marketing. Yeah. Know that you're a huge marketer.
I don't know if you guys can see my shirt, but in Star Wars font, it says the number one marketer in the galaxy.
Maybe you could point towards the camera, and I'll zoom it in. You're into marketing. I'm really inspired you on for marketing. You know, always go on the offense. Explain your background with marketing.
So with my first company, it was called Slim Pickens Meals. I felt that I was really good at the marketing side of the business, but I wasn't really good in terms of the operations and the cooking of the food and that whole, and the delivering. That just wasn't my favorite thing. But I liked the behind the scenes marketing, like setting up email campaigns, running Facebook ads, running Google ads, creating content, posting on social media, like that whole thing, like branding the company. I felt that was my strong suit. So then when I stopped doing that company and I started my next company, it was a marketing company specializing in, right now we specialize in branding and content marketing. In the beginning, it was kind of just let's just see how this goes and try different things. But now I focus on branding and then content marketing. Like I would help somebody like you start a podcast, whatchamacallit, then do a vlog, create blogs, post on social media, and just create a brand for yourself. Because like look at the UFC, like their brand is so strong that anybody that says, I'm a UFC fighter or I was a UFC fighter, they just get that like ultimate sense of legitimacy just because that UFC brand is so strong. And people go to UFC fights not because UFC runs ads and shows them tickets for a fight. It's just because it's the UFC. So you know, you associate the UFC with something that is legit and that is high level, elite. And then that's why people pay $70 to watch the pay-per-views and they go buy expensive tickets to the fights. It's just the brand. So that's what I'm trying to focus on with the marketing company, just helping people, entrepreneurs and companies, just help build the brand.
One of my favorite things you said these past couple months, and it really resonates, probably the marketing motto or mantra of the year is never stop getting new clients. Don't depend on that 10 clients that you know you always depend on. Mm-hmm. Always be on the offense.
Definitely.
Elaborate on that.
Because in the beginning of the marketing company, I had quite a few steady clients that were just month after month paying on time. Revenue was good, but then after a while, maybe around 4 or 6 months, more than half of them just cut off for various reasons. Like, oh, we can't afford it right now, or we're transitioning the business into another industry, and we're closing this business. Different things that led to the cutting off of that revenue and those clients. I was just like, ugh. Well, what do I get new clients now? Now, I had to start from square one in terms of prospecting, lead generation, follow-up, sales appointments, and, you know, officially closing a deal and getting that revenue in and getting that client. It takes time. In the beginning, I didn't really realize how long the sales process takes in terms of, like I said, getting a prospect, turning them into a lead, setting up a sales meeting or call, following up, and then closing the deal. It takes months sometimes. So,
which one of the tools that you use and I use a lot is LinkedIn.
Definitely.
Tell me your experience with LinkedIn.
Yeah, so LinkedIn is good for B2B marketing. So B2B means business to business. So let's say I run a marketing company and I want to help lawyers with their pay-per-click advertising or maybe their Instagram marketing. On LinkedIn, I can target only lawyers and I can connect with them on LinkedIn, like basically becoming their friend. And just start following up with them, sending them articles, checking in, wishing them a good week, just building that relationship slowly. And then once the time comes to where we have a bit of a conversation, then I'm like, oh, are you open to the possibility of discussing working on X, Y, and Z? So LinkedIn is really good for B2B, like I said.
Very good for targeting. Yeah, you're right. Search for lawyer.
As long as you understand your target audience, like down to the like, how old they are, how much money does the company make, how many employees do they have, what industry, what place in the business they're at, then the targeting on LinkedIn is really effective for hitting that specific ideal client.
And million-dollar question, should you get premium? LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's $80. If you really, I mean, that's the thing. If somebody's so, I wouldn't say cheap, but if they're not willing to invest $80
yeah.
a month into a business in the sense that that 80 can make you thousands, then you're not really, maybe that's not the business for you. Or maybe you're not for owning your own business.
Have you met fighters on LinkedIn?
No, that's the thing. Definitely not. It's just not. Like I say definitely not because it's just not. Even if you're a fighter and you know how to promote yourself, you're not on LinkedIn.
They're on Instagram.
They're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. No, so how I got my first couple clients and how I'm continuing to prospect and meet new clients is just being a. It's all basically referrals and being in the right place at the right time and being present. So my coach, he trains me in boxing, Kevin Gleason. He has a gym out in Sunrise. And I'm very active there. I go to the classes sometimes. I'm there hanging out, talking with the fighters. And even if, let's say, they don't want to sign with me or they're not looking for a manager, they might know somebody, another fighter, another even coach that's looking for a manager. And they'll be like, oh, there's this guy named Alex. He's awesome. He wears cool clothes, like this shirt. No, I'm kidding. And then he goes to this other gym I train at. Let me get his number for you. So just building the connections with the right people and being just present and being at the right place at the right time is really the only way to get clients.
That's the thing, guys. Face to face, going to gym,
and
you
just
know,
building relationships. And, and obviously, I think one underestimated thing is that a good way for me and, of course, other businesses to get new clients is to treat your current clients like kings and queens. Because if you treat your current clients like extremely well, they're going to be your marketing in the sense that they're going to go out and when they're in gyms with other fighters, they're just openly going to say, oh, my manager is doing a great job. He's getting me sponsors. He just got me this fight. He's looking out for me. You know, he negotiated my contract well. He's doing amazing. And that's just without me even telling them, hey, tell your fighters this and that. I'm just doing such a great job, theoretically, that I'm acting like this is, it's happened, whatever, but it's not really like an everyday thing. It's just that like if I'm doing such a great job for the client that they go out and they're not only a client, but they're an evangelist, like they're just like praising like what I'm doing for them to their other fighters. And it's just building that reputation in the industry and building the network of people that could possibly be clients.
Let's go into social media.
Yeah.
If you're on Instagram, what does Instagram pull up for like the whole random discovery? Like what do you see? I mean, like for mine is barbers for some reason and food, you know?
Yeah, it's funny how they know exactly what you like and what you want to look at. For me, a lot of it comes up like boxing videos, mitt work, fighting videos, business stuff as well, like Gary Vee, Tony Robbins, Dave Meltzer, those type of guys. Those just pop up on my Explore page. It's like a mix of business and fighting.
How's the fighter presence in it on like Instagram? Is it, you know, pretty extensive or is it?
Oh, it definitely should be. And that's why I have to deal with some of my clients is that they're so focused on the fight, which is obviously the most important thing, but they're not doing enough in terms of branding themselves and promoting themselves.
Documenting their training.
Exactly. That's funny thing is, I just got out of a meeting with my client, Landon Quinones. He, by the time this comes out, his fight will probably be announced. He's fighting soon, let's just say. Okay. He's fighting soon. And the idea I came up with is that let's get a sponsor, like a videographer who also edits. And then for fight week, he can film some of your behind the scenes and put out vlogs fight week. And then when you're cutting weight, he'll video that and put that up. And then at the weigh-ins, he'll film that in the back before the fight and then after the fight. And then also during camp, my fighter's going to hopefully film some of his training sessions, some of the work with his coaches, you know, like walking into the gym, setting the scene, stuff like that. So I actually just talked with him about that, like creating that behind-the-scenes look because most people, they watch fights, but they don't really know what goes into it. So I want my fighters to give people on YouTube and Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, obviously those platforms, a behind-the-scenes look at exactly like how they cut from 175 pounds to 145 pounds 8 weeks later. Like I want them to see that process. I want them to see the weight cut because that's just really good for the brand. And it's good for name recognition. Like everything is going to have their names in it. Like Miguel Beza, Landon Quinones. It's just those names are going to have to roll off the tongue.
Which is good. Yep. I mean, if you remember again, like the whole Logan Paul thing, like he would document, you know, for the past month or two what he did. He got a trainer and things like that. But what do you think about like when he when you told him about that? Like, was he okay with it?
Oh, definitely. He liked the idea because that's the thing. For some reason, people think fighters are dumb or stupid. It's just a bad stereotype that people have. But it's
horrible.
Fighters might be some of the most intelligent people that I know, in the sense that just to be a fighter, it's so much more mental than physical. And anybody that's trained or even fought once or twice will tell you that, or any coach, that fighting and even the fight business in general is obviously more mental than physical, because there's just so much emotionally, and like you're dealing with injuries, you're dealing with one coach telling you this, another coach telling you that. Like, once you're sparring or fighting in the cage or in the ring, having to deal with understanding their body language, their rhythm, getting their timing down, that's a lot of mental. And there's just so much more intelligence and IQ that goes into being a good or great fighter than most people realize.
How about when it comes to eating, like, what do these guys eat?
I mean, that's the thing. If you're cutting, let's say, in MMA, you have guys that are cutting at least 15 to 30 pounds every time they fight. So let's say I have a client, he's 175 pounds. It's called walking around weight. So like me and you are sitting here, we're not training for anything in particular. That's our walking around weight. So let's say I'm 175 and I get a fight booked in 9 weeks. That means I have 8 or 9 weeks once I really start my camp to cut down in terms of how much I'm eating and how hard I'm training to get my weight down from 175 to 145 on weigh-in. And that's the night before the fight.
And you know, especially during this time, it's going to be, you probably have to skip Thanksgiving.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you could have like turkey and greens, but no carbs or anything like that.
No mac and cheese.
Oh,
no. Where do you see your business in a few years? I would say 5, but you probably don't like that question.
No, 5, 10, yeah. It doesn't matter. It is kind of hard to see in the future, but it's important to have a vision, like you said.
Yeah.
I really do see myself being a mix of an MMA and then NFL agent, because I do love MMA and I do love the NFL. So I feel like having a blend of both isn't bad. I still want to have enough attention and enough time to give each client the work that they need and give them exactly, you know, my 100% and exactly the attention that they need. So I don't want to scale it to the point where I have like hundreds of clients and I can't give any of them the time of day. I want to have a solid group of MMA and NFL included. In five years, I would like to have 6 to 8 NFL guys and 15 to 20 MMA.
Wow.
That's the goal. Yeah.
And you know, like, to become an agent, you were telling me right before the show, it's not that difficult.
So that's,
well,
think about it like this. To become an MMA manager,
yeah,
you just have to go on whatever, like, let's say Florida Boxing Commission, their website. You put in your info, you give them $150, you're a manager now.
Wow.
You don't need to know about contracts, and you don't need to know anything, really. You could just become a manager. But with NFL or MBA, NFL, you need to have a master's degree. Or substitute that for experience in negotiating. It's like you got guys that have experience in real estate, they can get an NFL agent certification, or even like somebody like me, if I just get my associates or even bachelor's, but I'm an MMA agent and manager for like 4 or 5 years, I could definitely get my NFL agent certification. Just because it shows that, you know, I have 15 or 20 at the time, hopefully, current MMA clients, and, you know, nothing bad online about me or anything. It just shows that I understand contracts and I have whatever, an associate's or bachelor's mixed in with that. That's more than enough to get an NFL agent certification. And if you're MBA, you just need a bachelor's.
Would you do NBA?
Never say never. You know, that's the thing. I've done as much research as I can on the NFL and NBA agency business. There's only so much online about it. It's not really like marketing or even a consulting company. It's where you can research everything. You can research like how much they charge and how they deal with clients and all this. But for some reason, the sports agency business, it's a little kind of tied down, hidden. Like, people just don't give out their industry secrets and how they deal with clients and how much they charge. And how much they charge is usually standard, but little things like how many sponsors do they have, a lot of that's hidden. So I'm doing as much research as I can, but until I talk to the right people in each industry, then it's really hard to say yes or no to either one. It's more so, I'm definitely going to be in MMA for years to come, but it's just more a matter of, does NFL or NBA really fit in terms of my philosophy and how I want to run the business?
I think MMA is like a good door right now.
Oh, no, it's great, because I just know the right people. I love it. I
know. You're more involved with that.
I understand. That's the thing. I'm not like a manager that doesn't train and doesn't know anything about the technical side of, like, actual fighting. Like, I can just talk with the fighters and discuss with them, like, styles and matchups and current fights, and I just have that analytical side to it as well, to where it's just easy for me to relate to them and not really come off as like a manager, just to be their friend who they can talk to, but then also is their manager. So it's just that different type of vibe that I can bring to the table.
You ready for random questions?
Definitely. Bring them on.
Rapid fire.
Yep.
Has a teacher ever changed your life, and if so, how?
No.
If you had coffee with a fictional character, who would it be?
Forrest Gump. Wait, I scratched that. Ari Gold from Entourage.
Good one.
Yep.
Do you know any magic tricks?
No.
If you could, would you live in a hotel?
Yep.
What's your favorite mustard?
None. Mustard is disgusting. Whoever likes mustard, turn off this podcast. Mustard is nasty.
You really?
Ketchup,
I like it on my sandwich.
Day.
Okay.
Gosh. Delete. If you said ketchup, I would say like organic Heinz, no sugar, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the healthy yeah. ketchup.
How much can you bench?
I don't bench.
Okay. What's your...
I don't bench. Gosh. Yeah, I never benched. That's sad.
What's the worst pet to have?
A bird. Whoever has birds, oh, they need to really reevaluate where they're at in their life, because why are you going to get this animal who wants to be free and fly everywhere? How are you going to cage them up and hold them up in just this little dirty cage?
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, it's
like,
tough
to with dogs, birds. Dogs are totally cool because like they love humans and they like the affection, they like being around people. It's just a different thing. Like, you can't compare, like some people do, like dogs and cats to birds.
What is your favorite Rocky movie?
None. Actually, Rocky movies suck.
Oh,
they're
wow.
so cheesy.
Don't tell that to your parents.
Creed? I like Creed. Creed okay. is obviously a newer movie. Yeah. It's made in like the 2010s, so it's good quality in terms of the fighting scenes and the effects and stuff, but like I tried to watch the old Rockies and they're just cheesy. Like, I couldn't get through the first 30 minutes. It was so lame. Oh my gosh.
If you had to spend 1 hour with one of these three persons,
mm-hmm.
between Gary V, Grant Cardone, or Ty Lopez.
Definitely Gary V.
Okay.
Definitely. I was actually watching his video on the way over here.
No one has picked Ty Lopez yet.
I think I'm not really for or against him. That's the thing. Gary V promotes himself, but he's not like blatantly trying to sell you courses. Like, he'll give away extremely valuable information for free. And for Ty Lopez, I haven't really seen him give a ton of value besides like interviews and stuff. He just tries to sell all of his content, which is, he can make his money. I'm not really against it, but Gary Vee is just, seems like it's just a different person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you survive in the woods for 1 month?
No. I'm a city boy, suburb boy, whatever you want to call it. I have no sense of craftsmanship or survival tactics. No.
And what would you tell your 15-year-old self?
Get rid of your ego and you're not that cool.
15 was only 5 years ago for you, by the way.
Yeah, it still comes out now.
Not too long ago.
Yeah, it's still hidden there in the back of my brain.
And let's go for one more. How do you have your pancakes?
I don't eat pancakes.
I had a feeling you don't eat.
No, I like if they're there, I'll eat them, but I don't go out of my way to make them. They're just not that healthy.
What's your daily diet? Like, what's for breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Sometimes I don't eat breakfast. I'm in a rush. But if I do, I'll usually have kefir. Hit a kefir.
Yeah, the yogurt.
Yeah, I'll do kefir, berries, fruit. Peanut butter, almond butter, cheese seeds. Like, it's a good energy bowl. Right. For lunch, I'll have, if I'm going out to eat, I'll eat bole or chipotle, like a healthier option. If I'm cooking at home, I'll have some, I don't know, grass-fed ground beef or chicken breast, like super simple with rice and broccoli.
Whole Foods guy.
Yeah, nah, too expensive. I go to Walmart. people for some reason think that Whole Foods, everything is healthy, but in reality, a lot of the Whole Foods, like snacks and chips, they're just chips. It says Whole Foods on the front. Branding. That's why Whole Foods can charge so much more than Walmart. Probably like 40% more than Walmart for the same exact thing, because it says, what is it, 365 or whatever their Whole Foods brand is.
Full
it's
gimmick.
The same thing. And like a piece of broccoli, organic or not, is broccoli. So if I buy it at Whole Foods or Walmart, it's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Now, we didn't touch about this. Tell us a little bit about your podcast. That you do.
I do.
And your
podcast.
Videos.
Yeah, so I have a podcast called From the Jump. And if you type in From the Jump on iTunes podcast app, you'll see this smiley mug pop up. And yeah, it just says From the Jump with Alex Albrand, and it has my picture. Yeah. And I have 30 episodes posted right now. And it's basically something similar to this, where I interview local entrepreneurs, influencers, and even people that are, now I'm branching out to other states, like whatever, New York, California, etc., like doing Zoom interviews. And it's just to find out people's story and, you know, how they got involved with whatever business they're in. It's a business focused podcast, and I'm the host, so that, you know, it's gonna make it awesome. And no, I'm kidding.
What's your favorite business book?
How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's not really a business book per se, but it just, probably the most important skill in business that I've, through experience and also just through mentors telling me, is communication and social intelligence, like the ability to deal with people and to understand people's emotions and their wants and needs, and to be able just to navigate that. That's probably the most important skill to have in business starting out, even public speaking as well. And How to Win Friends and Influence People really describes how to deal with people and how to make them feel appreciated, and just how to deal with employees, customers, clients, etc., in a way that's going to help not only them feel appreciated, but then you progress your career and just get to where you want to get to. So How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Yes, which I heard a lot about that book. Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of entrepreneurs say that. And who is your favorite entrepreneur?
Gary Vee, yeah. I have to say. He's, yeah, obviously, that's most people's answer nowadays if you are on social media. But I just like his rawness and the fact that he gives away such valuable advice for free. And he really is just trying to help. He's not really trying to sell you his real estate course or sell you this and that. He's really just trying to help you out. And obviously, he makes money off his social media. It is what it is. Whatever. It's fine. And it helps his brand. But just from what I've learned from him so far, that's really helped me more so than anything I've learned in school. And even more so, like other things that I've watched online for my marketing agency. Like a lot of his philosophies and teachings, I take and I implement for my clients in terms of the branding side of things. So definitely Gary Vee.
And how can people reach you for any information about your agency?
Great question. Or anything? So my Instagram is Alex Albrand, A-L-B as in boy, A-R-R-A-N as in Nancy, _. So Alex Albrand _ on Instagram and Twitter. And my company website is albrandsports.com.
Alex, I really, really...
Thanks for having me on, man. This has been really great.
Really grateful to have you. I think you definitely, you know, you have a lot more, like, you are, like, way ahead than most 20-year-olds I've met. And definitely that, like the whole MMA agency, I think that's huge. I think it feels like it's untapped in a way-ish.
Absolutely. In terms of, like, I don't really like to hate on other people in the industries that I work in, but like I'm talking about like real professionals getting in and giving each fighter the attention they need in terms of helping them brand themselves and getting them the right fights at the right money for the right contract, like really helping them brand themselves. Right. I think Vantage Sports, Gary Vee's sports agency, they're doing that in the NFL, where they're not only being their agent, but they're also helping them with the marketing side of things in terms of social media and branding themselves. I think I'm going to bring that to the MMA industry, so all my fighters are going to have more followers and more exposure on YouTube as well, and then it's going to lead to more sponsorships for them, and because they have more exposure. So it helps them, it helps me, it helps just, it's going to help the whole industry as well.
It helps the sport.
It helps the sport, because the more fighters promote themselves, the more people are going to watch them fight, and the more people are going to watch MMA in general. So the better that these fighters can brand themselves, and the more I can help them do that, is only good for me, them, the promoter, the sport in general. It's a win-win all around. So that's really one of my main goals with this.
Alex, thanks for coming to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Anytime, man. Anytime.